This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulchin, Ford. Bird, Kulchin, Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into a brand new edition of the Bearcast on this Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. I'm Craig Smoak, Sikkim365.com, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver. Got Jack McKenzie and Garrett Ross behind the scenes, and another week with lots of news and lots of stories to unpack, which we will get into in short order from another edition through the transfer portal, which seemingly never stops. Every week, another pick up for Baylor football, and depending on how you view that, it's a good thing, it's a great thing, it's a maybe in-between thing. It's certainly not a bad thing adding personnel to this roster right now, but that is one of many topics we'll get into. I want to thank you for being with us as always. If you're joining us live Tuesdays at around 11:15 on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, if you haven't already, please hit like and subscribe. And if you're listening to us on any of the various podcast platforms, please give us that thumbs up or subscribe button click, and we would appreciate that as well. But another busy week, Grayson, and a lot to get to. How are you doing this week, man?
Doing well. I mean, I think in general, this was just a really good week for Baylor sports. I mean, got to see softball, of course, which we'll get to, another commitment for football. I think there's still momentum for basketball as well. So ultimately a good week and a lot to talk about, a lot to get to, as kind of multiple areas of Baylor sports really are the focus this week.
Yeah, well, the big tease that's going on right now, we didn't plan on talking about this, but there's all the scuttlebutt going on. Baylor football dropping a cryptic post, which they have not done much of, I feel like, in years past. They've not really been the most social media active. Like, on their main team page, they do the typical things that everybody else does, you know, like, here's this, here's that, here's whatever. But I don't feel like they've been, like, super involved in trying to, like, create, you know, talk really about the program. And they actually did that here this week, dropping just a slight teaser of, I guess, what would you even call it? Like a kind of a stadium shot, like a stadium lights type of shot, like you're coming up the tunnel, so to speak. It doesn't really reveal much at all, but there has been reason to wonder what this is about, and has led some people to wonder, hey, is Baylor getting new uniforms? Because in the latest NCAA video game trailer that was debuted just a few days ago, everybody watched that and was trying to figure out where their team was or if their team was in the game, and just looking for any little thing that stood out. And for Baylor football, there was a clip of what looked to be the run out on McLean Stadium, complete with the fireballs at midfield, and what was definitely not Baylor football's uniforms that Baylor football was wearing, unless, as somebody pointed out, like Michigan State was visiting in this game's teaser, which wouldn't likely be the case. That wouldn't make much sense, and they're not on the schedule. So a little bit of a just kind of mystery going on here, and people trying to play detective, and a lot of people hoping that this will mean new uniforms. But Baylor football, a couple of hours ago, putting out their little three-second teaser of just kind of a shot from the tunnel in the dark, looking up at the stadium lights and moving around a little bit, and then 5/28/24 is now what follows that and is what their caption is on a pinned tweet from just a couple of hours ago. So we don't have any news to break per se, but it certainly seems like there's some news to be dropped, or there will be some news dropped next week. And a lot of people speculating and getting excited about this. So this is kind of feels different. They don't do stuff like this a whole lot. So kind of fun to see what's going to happen here in the next few days.
Right. There will definitely be news dropped on that date. I think that's pretty apparent. I also think that that is, it kind of comes across to me as the beginning of a video that they're going to be showing. And so, I think it's really cool. Like you mentioned, this hasn't been something that's been the norm for Baylor football as far as, you know, trying to create a bunch of interests or create a lot of conversations. But definitely this week, as just kind of you alluded to, the whole NCAA football game coming out, the fact that Baylor was in it, the fact that they're wearing different uniforms, the fact that other schools have gotten new uniforms or upgrades over this offseason. I think a lot of those signs point to the direction that you were talking about. And so I know there's a lot of rumors on Twitter, a lot of rumors that are coming out. And, yeah, very curious to see kind of how they handle this whole release of whatever it might be that they're releasing.
Well, certainly a lot of signs pointing to news on potentially uniforms. And if that were the case, I'm all for it. I feel like the stuff that they've been wearing just – it was fine for what it was for like a transitional period, but it is just so bland, yeah. to be quite frank with you. And so I would be all for a freshening up and like maybe a stripe here and there, just like something that's not just, we basically took a template and just gave it to right. you.
Maybe
I mean,
an alternate.
Yeah, that something. Would be nice. Yeah, an alternate would be good. They've obviously been hesitant to get too crazy with the uniforms since they were the craziest with uniforms years ago. And there was a whole, you know, transitional period, obviously, from that time period to where we are now. And they did a little bit of just kind of, I guess, damage control in a way by shedding the old looks for just more of a plain Jane kind of look. And if you listen to Mac Rhodes before, he's talked about there's always people demanding when they got their last uniforms of like, why didn't you get black and why didn't you do this? It's like they didn't have the options, guys. Yeah. They like he's done an interview with us where he said like we were fortunate that Nike even wanted us to be a part of their brand at that point. Like we had to not beg, but we were very fortunate to even get Nike because things were so bad back then. And there's a lot of people that don't get that because they were too young or just don't understand. And so that was kind of a contributing factor to how those came out, was that those weren't like a Nike was all in and they were designed. They're like, all right, we'll do your uniforms and we'll change them up a little bit. But it wasn't as though they were going for like a big, you know, shock and awe type of like, wow. And mm-hmm. so they came across very plain. They've been fine. They've served them well, but I would be all for a little bit of a shakeup is the point. So circle your calendars for a week from today. Very well could have some good news on that front for uniform folks, even though people have already dissected it and said, I don't think I even like the ones in the video games. You're just not going to make anybody happy. And that is just such typical Baylor fan response. So that's going to be fun to see whatever that is.
Right, it will be. And I think, remember that first time, a lot of it was just about having all the sports programs being united, right, having the same colors and things like that. I don't think they're going to stray too far away from that. I really don't. And so we'll see, you know, kind of what they announce, how they go about releasing it. I think that's really important. You want to make a statement when you put out those uniforms and get people excited, especially as, you know, things are getting closer to the season. And Baylor does need some positive momentum, I think. You know, a lot of people look at win totals. A lot of people, you know, have their, I think, hesitations about the football program. And so if you're able to kind of create a little bit of momentum right now, I think that's a great thing and good for the fan base as well.
Yeah, so looking forward to that reveal on little teaser coming up a week from today. And I would think that that would probably be something you drop in the morning, so I would feel like we'll have a good shot of being able to talk about that next week if it were to drop early enough in the morning that we can turn around and have it on the show to be able to talk about. That would be good. Either way, we will get to it as soon as we possibly can, whatever that may be. Meanwhile, on the football front, SMU is now a part of the future schedule for Baylor football. We had Mac Rhodes here in studio talking about a variety of different things, and he kind of alongside the social media reveal revealed to us simultaneously that Baylor has added a pair of non-conference matchups for 2025 and 2026 with the SMU Mustangs, who are now a part of the ACC conference. So this is a Power 4 matchup for the Bears and the Mustangs. And that will mean that you will see SMU at Baylor on September 6th of next season, at Ford Stadium, next season. And then in 2026, McLean Stadium will be the site for the return game as the Ponies will come to Waco. So, yeah, next year in Dallas, the year after in Waco. And that's going to be a pretty nice matchup because they haven't played each other in a few years. The last time they were playing, there was a very lopsided balance between the two. Now they're a little bit more eye-to-eye. I don't think you love that if you're Baylor, obviously. But SMU is on its way up to a new conference, and this should be a very competitive game. There's obviously some crossover, guys like Keenan Hall, who is at SMU now at Baylor, and a lot of people who have been around both programs. recruiting-wise, this should be a big battle as well. They come across a lot of the same prospects. So what are your thoughts on adding SMU to the schedule?
Definitely a lot of momentum, I think, for SMU right now as far as moving to the ACC. And just in general, their recruiting has been good. And I think there's just momentum there. So it'll be interesting to see Baylor play them. Like you mentioned, recruiting purposes, in-state kind of foes, potentially becoming rivals. I know SMU's big rival is still TCU, but for Baylor to kind of establish a little bit of a rivalry there, I think is, you know, cool and a good thing as well. Also to mention, you know, it's going to be fascinating because Baylor's going to play SMU in 2025 and 2026. They're also going to play Auburn in 2025 and 2026. So that schedule is looking very, very interesting for Baylor. A little bit loaded. I know Auburn's down right now, but we know how that is with Auburn. It's kind of comes and goes in waves. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm very intrigued by kind of how Baylor is starting to schedule over these next few years. This year, we know how tough it's going to be in the non-con. In the next couple years, it's pretty solidified.
Yeah, and those will not be at the same, I guess, site as far as both being home games in the same year, both being away games. Next year, they'll host Auburn and then go to SMU, and then the next year following that, 26, they'll be at Auburn and then host SMU. So it balances out. But, yes, Auburn and SMU, now the non-con opponents for the next couple of seasons. Of course, this year you've got Air Force and Utah and also Tarleton State. So there's still another game to be filled for 25 and 26, but that SMU contest does answer pretty big questions because you only had the Auburn game marked so far. So that'll lead you to believe that third opponent in 25 and 26 will be somebody not very tough. They don't need anybody super special to make that schedule pop. So that would be, I mean, a Long Island would be fine if you're playing Auburn and SMU. It'd be totally understandable to play somebody along those lines, or Albany, or
Tarleton State like they're playing this year. Very similar, yeah.
So Auburn and SMU, yeah, in 25 and 26, and obviously that matchup with the Ponies, as we said, is a bit bigger than it's ever been in previous years. So I like that schedule addition, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun and obviously an important game for both teams. So that was another juicy piece of news going on, and the transfer portal is closed, but that doesn't mean that those in it are finished with their recruitments. Still a lot of players that are without homes, and that's at least lessened by one body as Baylor has added another commitment out of the transfer portal, well into double digits now, but East Carolina linebacker Ra-Ra Dilworth committing to the Bears this week. Another piece of news, and if you're signed up to the 365 Sports, the Sikkim365.com text alerts, then you got this out of nowhere the other day, and man, it just feels like it's been a constant drip of transfer additions this offseason. And if it feels that way, it should, because it has been that way. What, they're at 13, I think, additions now at this point, now with Ra-Ra Dilworth. So going to the linebacker position, Grayson, what does this mean? Why him? And, you know, kind of how does this all add up big picture-wise?
Right. So, I mean, this was kind of, it was out of nowhere as far as, you know, who the prospect was going to be. But it was very clear last week that this Baylor staff was really focused on adding a linebacker. They looked at multiple guys. Specifically, I think towards the end, it was Tyler Juco prospect Caden McMahon. He ended up committing to Kansas State. And then, of course, Ra-Ra Dilworth. Dilworth didn't even visit Baylor. He was offered, committed on the spot. And just felt like the fit was perfect for kind of what he could be this season. He only has 1 year of eligibility remaining, as well as he spent two seasons at North Carolina and then 1 year at East Carolina, which is where he transferred from. He was a former four-star guy in the 2021 class, number 103 ranked player in the country. So, I mean, a big-time prospect, a blue-chip type prospect, had offers from Alabama, Georgia, NC State, South Carolina, Auburn, LSU, Michigan State, Penn State. I mean, the talent is there. I mean, he was an Under Armour All-American, posted a 4.38 40 time, hand-timed. So all of that, you kind of put that all together, the pedigree is there for him to be a very high-level athlete, which Baylor needs. Baylor needs more athletes. They need more speed on the defensive side. I mean, I think he's going to bring that to the table. Now, as far as what specifically will he do at Baylor, I think primarily his function is going to be the backup will linebacker behind Keaton Thomas. I think he's going to play in kind of special packages as well, as far as if you take off a linebacker, maybe slide Keaton Thomas to Mike, then you can play him and Keaton at the same time. provide a little more coverage, a little more speed, a little more ability on third down, some unique pass rushing looks as well. And then he could also play a little bit of nickel as well. He's got some, he's shown that he can do that with his coverage. So I think in general, he's going to add some ability and coverage that the linebackers currently don't have, especially the depth at the position. And then I think he's also just going to make them a little more versatile and allow them to show different offenses, variations, and just different looks defensively with his ability to cover and pass rush. So overall, I like the pickup. I think it's a depth pickup. I don't view this as, oh, he's coming in being a superstar or a full-time player, but I think he is a guy that can fill a role very nicely in this defense. And he's a one-year guy, so you're really not taking a lot of risk as far as, you know, how long he's going to be in the program.
So they've got more than one side of the ball just based on transfers alone. Like you could fill an entire side of any phase, over 11 guys now added through the portal. So if you take that to be a positive, then it's positive. If you take that to be a warning sign, then, you know, ultimately time will tell. But now at the stage of just adding depth through the transfer portal. So I don't know what that says, honestly. I really don't. I do have some concerns when it comes to the offensive line. I laid that out in an article the other day. I just think that when you're adding, like, an entirely new O-line through the portal after you've already gone through spring ball, that just, to me, is – I don't know how that's good news, because it just feels like you don't have in place what you need to have in place 3 months before the season starts, and now you're expecting it all to come together and be functional. And I'm not, like, very optimistic about that. It's doable. I'm just not super optimistic about it. But some of these others, I think there's no doubt they're going to have some difference makers. It's just a matter of what the hit rate is. And if it's high enough, then that's great news, and they should be winning some football games. But, man, if they whiff in some of these, then it's going to be tough sledding, because they are going to be leaning on a lot of these guys. But in this case, not somebody that you're, like, expecting to have to, you know, man the middle linebacker position and captain right. your defense or anything along those lines.
Yeah, he's just coming in. He's going to give them depth. And also, he'll play special teams. He played a lot of special teams at East Carolina. He's just going to fill a role and a need. And honestly, Baylor was so bad at linebacker last year. And I know a lot of people point to, oh, well, Mike Smith was bad. But it's like, Mike Smith played four games last year and then was hurt. I really do think had he played the full year, it would have helped substantially, because the drop-off from him to the other guys on the roster was just eye-opening. I mean, they really have to get better at that position. I think adding him to the mix should give them at least some help and solidify some things if injuries occur, or, again, if they want to be creative, which I do think they're going to want to be this season.
So a new pickup there from the transfer portal, and, man, where are we now? I mean, how many spots could they possibly have? I think it was two weeks ago. They've added another two guys. There hasn't been any further attrition, so where are we on the transfer tracker and the roster limits here?
I still think there's one spot left, if I had to guess. I think that's kind of where they're at. There's just a lot of, it's hard to really know. There's a lot of different things and a lot of different reporting going on out there. I know, like, I think Texas Tech this week, they added Mikel Harrison Pilot out of Temple, and the rumor that I think was posted all over the internet was that he's going in as a walk-on, and then he's just getting NIL to pay for the scholarship and whatnot, which is, that is a completely new wrinkle to kind of how things are going to be played out in college football.
Well, that's also what occurs. Cormani McClain's doing at Florida.
Correct.
So that's become the new thing. And
yeah,
I say this all the time. We sit there and these poor coaches, and not that anybody's really poor coaching it, you know, when it comes to getting emotional about it or anything, but there are, like, a lot of pushback. There is a lot of pushback now. I'm like, there's so much that's gone the way of the player now that it's like, all right, can we just find some freaking middle ground somewhere? Like, somewhere in here. And at the same time, the moment you start to even feel a little bit for the coaches, because their time management is like nil at this point, like there's no time to do anything but recruit and just be on the job 24/7. But the moment that happens in college football, like the same characters show their true colors and they find a new way to bend the rules and try to get an advantage. And it's like, even if it's legal, like, hey, I'm not knocking that per se, but it's just so college football that, like, to think that anybody's ever just going to not try to find a way to screw the system and get an advantage is just foolish. Yeah. And so Texas Tech, yeah, and now Florida, and I'm sure there are others as well, have realized that hey, we'll just pay NIL money and put guys on walk-on scholarships for a year, and that way they don't take up a roster spot and we still get the guy that we want. And it's smart, but it is gaming the system a little bit. So, it's I guess makes it for a more fluid conversation, because in theory, Baylor could do that. I don't really love this idea, but I suppose there's that route they could take as well.
It's not the greatest thought by any means that that's happening all over the place, but it is. It's just the reality of it. So we'll see kind of how things unfold. I will say this felt like one of the last needs that they had as far as kind of what they wanted to address this kind of post-spring period. But again, I think maybe one spot, maybe two spots, somewhere along there. I would say one at the moment. And for that, I'm not really sure where they're going to go. But what I know right now is I think the staff feels good about where the roster is at. And I think they've filled the needs that they need to fill through the transfer portal, guys they need to add, especially up front. They've really, really changed the tide, I think, in both of those areas, on the offensive line and defensive line, to get them closer to a place where I think they feel good and confident going into the summer.
So were they 13 transfers at this point?
Well, more than that. 16, I think.
Okay, I was looking at our list on the site. So yeah, I think 13 here.
I think Ra-Ra gets them to 16.
Okay.
16 or 15, because that gets them 6 in the post-spring and right. 9 in the
We're missing a couple early, then.
Yeah, I'm sure we're missing a few.
Yeah, but. So just saying that, like, yeah, there's been a lot. There's been clearly into the double digits now, and so we'll see how that goes. But now a new name to know in Ra-Ra Dilworth, so welcome aboard to him, and hopefully he enjoys his time in Waco, and it is impactful. But where does that leave us? I mean, big picture, you just said, like, maybe another spot left for the transfer portal, but, like, where are they just in general with, like, just recruiting, period, not transfer guys and dipping into the portal? Like, is there anything on the regular recruiting front that's newsworthy this week?
So, of course, official visits are going to start that June 7th weekend. So we're getting really close to that. We're actually going to have a preview of that, I'm sure, maybe not next week, but the week after, just kind of getting ready for that official visit weekend. They'll have 3 in a row during June, in which they're going to try to land a bunch of prospects. I think they're probably going to be in the double digits when it comes to prospects that commit over the course of those 3 weekends. I think the most immediate things on the radar right now, Cy Falls linebacker Caleb Burns released his final 7. Baylor was included in that, along with SMU, Florida, Texas Tech, Houston, Pitt, and Washington. So a good list there. Something to keep an eye on. Wide receivers, they've been offering a ton of wide receiver prospects. Really, I think, just trying to make sure that they don't get kind of left out with some of their top guys. They're going to have to take probably 4 wide receivers in this 2025 class just to make up for the fact that they're going to lose so many off of this roster. A few ones to keep an eye on. They offered Archbishop Shaw, 4-star wide receiver Jacob Washington. He's out of Louisiana. I think he's going to take an official visit to Baylor probably the June 21st weekend. He hasn't scheduled it yet, but I think over the course of the next week, he probably will. He's got a really good offer list. Miami, Georgia Tech, Missouri, Boston College, Ole Miss, Penn State. A good group of schools recruiting him. DeCaney, wide receiver, 4-star, Tanu Kynes is just blown up. He was really a priority guy for Baylor going into this recruiting period, and he has just, I mean, he ran a 10.45 at the UIL State Championships in the 100 meter and a 20.71 200 meter at the UIL State Championships. So he's a focal point in this class. He was offered by Georgia recently. He's going to take an official visit to Baylor, USC, Notre Dame, and I believe he already took one to Arizona State. So another name there. And then Shadow Creek wide receiver Ja'Cory Watson, another 4-star guy. He's teammates with Baylor commit Ashton Jones. I think he's going to end up taking an official visit. It's not scheduled yet, but I think he's one to also keep an eye on. So again, a lot of momentum, a lot of movement at the wide receiver position. And then one final note at the quarterback spot. We talked about Coppell quarterback Edward Griffin, I think last week or 2 weeks ago when he got the offer. He's now going to take an unofficial visit this week, and he's hoping to schedule his official visit going forward into June. Of course, he was the District 6-6A MVP of his district, and just a guy who really good football player. The first quarterback offer after the loss of Adam Schoble. So that'll be, again, something to keep an eye on as they really try to get that guy who's going to be the anchor for this class at the quarterback position.
So there you are on a little bit of recruiting, just traditionally recruiting. There's also talk about signing days moving. There's some action there that's been out there just today, potentially moving up the December signing period to the beginning of December, like the first week of December, as opposed to what it was last year, which was the same week as Christmas, basically, or it was like right around that time, which was just stupid. Like that was dumb how muddled that whole week was, like with Christmas and bowl games ongoing. It just, I don't know, that didn't make a lot of sense last year where that fell. So earlier in the month of December, there's no great time because that's going to coincide with conference championship games and all of that. But then again, when are you going to do it? Like you only have so many options. But the other item being tossed around and according to some reports likely to pass is you look like you could basically have three signing days now. There would be a signing day in June that would basically shut down the month of July based on what I was reading earlier. July would just be nothing, like no nothing recruiting wise, so that everybody can get a dadgum break from recruiting once a year. Like, truly, step away, like, no phone calls, no text messages, nothing.
Dead period.
Yeah, like, a real dead period for the month of July, I believe. But there would be a signing day in, like, June, so.
For the class that would supposed to sign in December, yeah. Or for the previous class?
For the class that's supposed to sign in December, I believe. So, okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's all, they're trying to figure out a solution to the recruiting calendar, but the way it's been going, it's clear that they need to change it up again. It's just not. Not the most streamlined way of doing things. Although, whatever they do, man, the transfer portal just screws it up anyways, because if it is that class, then, I mean, nothing prevents that. It doesn't matter if it's the guys who are supposed to sign months before or if it's the guys who are supposed to sign months later. If they sign in that July, I don't know what prevents them from just going to the portal when they want to anyway. So, exactly. Like, the whole thing's screwed up from the top down, and that's the issue. It's not like when it's happening. It's that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because there's no cap on transfers. There's no, like, there's really nothing barring you from leaving basically when you want to, other than you got to be in the portal by a certain time. So, I mean, I think it takes some weight off of plates in the summertime when you do need a little bit of a break before the season starts, but I don't know how much it solves with just how much the traditional signing of your national letter of intent just doesn't really mean that much anymore.
It wouldn't matter at all. And I mean, that's, you would think if you kind of look at it and go, oh, that's a good thing for Baylor, because if a guy goes into his senior season and blows up and then, you know, schools offer late, you would say that it would help Baylor, but you're exactly right. I mean, the letter of intent doesn't mean anything anymore. It feels like guys can just get out of that whenever, enter the transfer portal, go ahead and go somewhere else. So I don't know how much that will change or how much that will impact things outside of the guys who just completely want to shut down their recruitment after their official visits. Then it makes sense. But in general, just where we're at in college football, I don't know that it would make much of a difference.
Yeah, so there's some proposals out there. You could see some changes to that. But point being, just the game remains fluid and recruiting remains fluid. So just, you know, if you're into that sort of thing, the recruiting side of things, then there could be some changes coming based on a lot of the talk here of late and some of the news today. So speaking of recruiting, we've kind of touched on everything football, I believe, but on the basketball side, the portal is still, active when it comes to hoops and transactions, and Baylor obviously got off to a very quick start with a couple of major name pickups right away. Since then, it's been a little quieter. You know, a Jonas Adu ends up going somewhere else, but there's been other names that have been swirling around, and we know there's a lot, like, it's like football where there's going to be 16 guys. You're going to have like maybe another guy that joins the fray. But in terms of basketball discussion around recruiting right now, what is the things to know about what Scott Drew and company are trying to achieve at the moment?
Right now, I think the biggest thing is, you know, Baylor's trying to find another center, another big man who they feel like can take some pressure off of Josh O, also off of Norchad Omir, just a guy who you feel like can be serviceable enough to provide depth and also compete with Josh O at times if he's not, you know, playing to the level that they're expecting him to play at this season. I think that's the top priority. That's pretty much what they're, I think, targeting right now. I think they might have two spots, but in general, it's going to be depth. depth, right? You're going to be focused on that center position to round out your actual guys who are going to play, and then maybe a depth piece late. But it's been exciting, I think, for Baylor men's basketball. You look at our premium section of Ashley's men's basketball portal thread, it has 388,000 views. Just on the premium side. It's been remarkable. If they get another commitment, it'll push it over 400,000. There's just so much excitement with that program right now, and for good reason. You know, this is a program that's shown that they're going to go out and compete NIL-wise. They're going to go out and compete nationally with the national championship they won in the Big 12, of course. And I just think in general, when you see a program that's trending in this kind of direction, it's very easy to be bought in on that. And I think what Scott Drew and the staff are doing is really special, and they have a chance to have a really, really good season. I love the roster that they've built up to this point.
So there you go with a little bit of a news roundup. SMU added to the 25 and 26 schedules in football, the first game in Dallas in 2025. That means that Auburn and SMU will be on the schedule for the next couple of years. Baylor football teasing what looks like it could be some uniform news based on the NCAA video game snippets and just how that didn't seem to really make much sense based on what their uniforms look like. And now you're getting this teaser and put two and two together. I just already see people who are like, if it's not chrome gold, man, I'm rioting. It's like, well, set yourself up for failure. Why don't you? I love how people's imaginations, they get like a glimpse of something. They're like, if it's not this or that, then I'm going to be pissed off. And it's like, well, you have nobody to blame but yourself, honestly, for that. So that's still, though, interesting news. You've got the rah-rah Dilworth addition through the transfer portal as well at linebacker. And recruiting continues on, both in the transfer portal and traditionally. So a lot going on with football right now, and obviously some news of some sort a week from today based on that teaser that we'll have to talk about. Hopefully whatever that is drops in the morning so that we can turn around and talk about it on this podcast. And then basketball going through the steps of adding to their roster still as well. Meanwhile, spring sports pretty much wrapped up at this point. Not a surprise. We already knew Baylor baseball season is over. Mitch Thompson and company not making the Big 12 baseball tournament, which is going to start up this week, or has actually, I guess, already gotten underway now in Oklahoma City. And that's a disappointment, man. I mean, we had Mac Rhodes in here the other day, and there was just so much going on with, like, lawsuits and things like that that we hadn't talked to him in a while and wanted to pick his brain on. That we didn't get much into the nitty-gritty of kind of some of the spring sports. But I'd imagine the next time we talk to him, we're going to be, you know, asking his thoughts on Mitch Thompson 2 years in and sort of where they are as a program and just other sports in general. But to not even make the field, man, that's just it's not a good feeling, and it's not certainly what you strive to do. So I don't know. Going to be a very interesting offseason for Baylor baseball. And curious to hear what Mac Rhodes has to say about it next time. Like I said, we get to talk to him in Arlington. I felt like it wasn't Oklahoma City softball, but Arlington for the baseball tournament. Just correct myself there. It's just one of those things. So not good news on that side, but on the other side of the diamond, when it comes to the spring diamond sports, you've got softball, which is still very much alive and is now moved on to the next phase of the postseason NCAA Super Regionals in Gainesville, Florida, where they will take on the Gators, the hometown squad. And that is going to be a big-time matchup starting up on Friday there in Gainesville at Katie Seashell Presley Stadium. And this all, of course, a result of being able to get out of the regional round by going to Lafayette and winning 2 of 3, beating the Raging Cajuns at their home spot, winning games 1 and games 3, won 8-0 in the opener, lost 13-0 in the rematch, and then in the third and final contest, a 4-3 win on Sunday afternoon. So Glenn Moore and Baylor softball on to the next round and taking on the Gators. Pretty good stuff there from the Baylor softball program and a lot of big moments out of that weekend as well.
Definitely. I mean, let's start with softball really quick. Just an awesome weekend. And to see Glenn Moore get this program back to a super regional, it was time. It was time for them to make that push. We talked about it a few times throughout the year, just kind of how this program, while it's been really good and consistent, they haven't made the Super Regional since, I believe, 2017. So they were due for this, and they were due to make this run. It felt like a region that was winnable, to be honest. They'd already beaten Louisiana in a series earlier in the year, and the Ole Miss matchup wasn't all that scary, and they were able to get through that, take care of business, obviously go into Sunday with all the pressure of that second game and still be able to come through. I think that was a very big deal for them. Unfortunately, you make it to a Super Regional, you're going to have to play someone that's really good. And Florida is coming in on, I believe, an 11-game win streak right now. This is a program that's 19-9 versus teams that are inside the top 25 in RPI, which Baylor is. Baylor's 16th in RPI. Florida is number 4. Baylor's 7-14 versus the top 25. So not great statistics there, but I do think in general – Baylor's schedule, the fact that they've had to play Texas, that they've had to play Oklahoma, they've had to play Oklahoma State, they've had to play Tennessee, they've had to play some really, really good programs. I do think it will prepare them for this kind of matchup, even though they are clearly not the favorites going into this. And I would be pretty surprised if they were able to advance past this point. But in general, I think anytime that you make a Super Regional, it is definitely considered a very successful season. Now, on the other side of things, Baylor baseball, I mean, RPI 135th in the nation. I mean, they were really, really bad to end the year. They were really bad all year long, and it's just hard to find much positives, to be honest, after this season. They went 2-21 against top 50 teams in the country. That's just, 2 wins? I mean, that's just not good enough. And overall, this year was really disappointing. I think after last year's, you know, really bad season, you kind of felt like, okay, can we see some improvements this year? And, I mean, when you look at the end of the year numbers, there weren't that many improvements from a year ago. So you kind of got to wonder, you know, how does this program take a step forward? How does it come back to, you know, where it was for, you know, a long stretch in there in the 2010s and even before that? It's just really interesting and something I don't really have an answer for at the moment. And I'm hoping Mitch Thompson can turn around because I think he's a good coach, but two very disappointing seasons back to back.
Yeah, and it had a lot of promise, but yeah, they kind of were there one moment, and the next they were fading at an incredible rate, and then not even making the postseason tournament is certainly a very tough pill to swallow. And just actually saw where one of the early results is in from Arlington. I think K-State just fell to rival Kansas. The Jayhawks getting a 2-1 win there in Arlington, so KU onto the winner's bracket. Not that most people listen to this care, especially with no Baylor involvement, but that just happened to come down officially right as we were talking about this. So, yeah, I mean, that was an event you would like to have been a part of, but no real sign on when they'll be back to something like that. And I don't know right now just sort of where the feeling is, especially in this era, this NIL era. Like, what are the expectations right now? Like, what are they – you obviously expect to win no matter who the coach is or what the circumstances are, but – you know, where do you view a baseball, and especially in an era now where the more you talk about full scholarships for entire teams and things like that, I mean, you're just not going to be able to compete with the SEC realistically year in and year out without some major investments in baseball specifically. And so it's just like Baylor's just in a spot now where I don't know that you can really be good at everything all at once anymore. You know what I mean? It's going to be really tough to do that at least. And so I just wonder what the expectation and investment level is in baseball. I think the investment level's there. It's just like, what should fans come to want to see or expect to see every year? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand that. And I'm not necessarily saying that they should be a super regional team or anything like that every year, because it is tough. I mean, the SEC clearly has advantages. I mean, even the Big 12 this year wasn't very good. But my issue is, like, programs like West Virginia, Cincinnati, Kansas State, Kansas, UCF, Houston, BYU, like, those programs should not be finishing ahead of Baylor. Like, in my eyes, that should be the expectation. I know those, you know, programs have had, you know, moments here and there. West Virginia, of course, has been pretty good in the Big 12 for a while now, but I don't see any reason why Baylor shouldn't be on their level every single year. And for them to finish 80 spots behind Cincinnati in baseball, it's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around, to be honest.
No, it is too. I'm wondering out loud of like,
because they have the same disadvantages. I know private school does matter when it comes to baseball. From everything I've heard, I know that that can be a disadvantage, and I think we've seen that at times. But I also just think, you know, when it comes to this sport and the history of it, I don't feel like Baylor should be falling behind a program like Cincinnati in baseball.
Yeah, so we'll see kind of what the answers to those questions are, and what, you know, those answers are. It really only matters. It doesn't matter what I'm trying to figure out. It matters what Mac Rhodes thinks and what the boosters think. And so I'm just very curious to see moving forward of, like, what are you thinking about this program and what they should be accomplishing. And it doesn't help, really, when softball's then going and hitting a super regional and winning on the road in the regional round to Vance and to take care of business. So that's great news. You celebrate it, but it does make you wonder, okay, so what does that mean for others and sort of where we are big picture-wise? But there is one diamond sport that continues on. You had some cool moments, you know, Aaliyah Benford hitting a grand slam to help crack that open in game number three. So glad they didn't leave any doubt and glad they were able to go and accomplish that second win there in the finale. So good stuff for Glenn Moore and company, and we'll see what they can do down in Gainesville here in the next few days. So there you go with that. Spring sports rolling on along, although starting to wind down here. You got track going on as well, but that's just kind of a – their schedule's sort of – it's very strange and kind of hard to keep up with. But, yeah, spring semester still alive despite graduation a few weeks ago. So there is – that, and with that, talking a little bit of softball and a little bit of baseball as well, that is pretty much all of the news I think that we have at our disposal this week. And so let's go ahead and get on into the mailbag and see what you guys have to say about or want to know about when it comes to the various things that we've been talking about and also the things that are just on your mind when it comes to Baylor Athletics. And I can't find, okay, here we go, the Bearcast questions. Let's go. Scotty B, the Baylor King, starting us off here. Which Big 12 football team do you think is getting too much hype this offseason?
This is a good question because, you know, you look at the top 25 polls that everyone's putting out. You know, the only teams that are really consistently ranked are Kansas State, Utah, and then some combination of Kansas and Oklahoma State, somewhere in there. And when we looked at the, you know, over-under win totals, it was kind of, you know, the three at the top, Kansas State, Utah, and Kansas, and then everyone else just kind of mixed and matched at, you know, 7.5 and lower. So if you're going to say overhyped, it has to be one of those teams that is ranked that I think maybe could be down for a bad year. And this might come as a surprise because I've been a huge defender of Mike Gundy. I think he's a really good coach. I think that he just finds ways to win football games. But I'm not a believer in some of the things they did last year. I think they got lucky at times last season, and I love Ollie Gordon, but I just wonder if they're really going to be able to maintain that level of success and luck I believe they had last year. So I think if you have them in your top 25, I think they're going to be a little bit lower than that. I think they're going to be more like a 7 or 8 win team this year.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I have a hard time doubting Mike Gundy. I don't think they're just going to go run away with the league by any means, and I don't know that bringing everybody back is necessarily always a good thing, but I think they'll be a solid enough team. Winning the Big 12, yeah, I don't know about that. I'm torn. I think Arizona's getting a lot of love, but I can kind of understand why with their quarterback and their wide receiver. And a lot of people now, like, talking about Teteroa McMillan and Noah Fafita as though, like, they're like, commonplace. But there was not a lot of there's not nearly enough people talking about them last year. And if you missed out on watching them last year, they were a lot of fun. Now, there's a coaching change to Brent Brennan from Jed Fish. So we'll see how that impacts how explosive those guys were. But they're pretty talented. I think Kansas, like, the talk about winning, like, 9 games, 10 games, I'm not sold on that. Yeah. That's where I'm more of, like, yeah, I think they'll be good, but I'm not sure that good. A lot will depend on Jalen Daniels, though. Like, how healthy is he? That's the big thing. So they're kind of the one for me that I go, yeah, I think they might be a little – I think they're going to be good. I just don't know that they're going to, like, win the Big 12.
Yeah, and I can understand that. The only thing that gives me – any bit of confidence with Kansas as their quarterback because of Jalen Daniels. And if he doesn't get hurt, you kind of got to think, okay, they're going to be in every game next year. And I think that's where I kind of pull back on Oklahoma State a little bit. I don't trust their quarterback very much. I don't think he's a game changer, but I definitely understand that part of it. As far as slept on, who do you think, what team's being slept on the most this offseason? That's the second part of Sky's question.
Let me see. Slept on. I don't know. There's a lot of teams at like 7.5 wins, so I don't know if you could really consider that being slept on. I mean, you have to basically look at like Baylor and
Colorado
and like Houston. I mean, everybody else is expected to be a bowl team, basically. So I think Houston could be better than expected, but I don't think they're going to be that good. So I don't know. I don't feel like Baylor's some sleeping giant that they're going to be much better than expected. So I don't know. I'd have to give that some more. I don't think Colorado's being slept on at all. They're getting more than enough attention, good and or bad. And I don't think people, like, I don't think it would be shocking if they weren't very good. So yeah, I don't feel like people are really sleeping on them.
And they have an entirely new team, which is that a good thing?
So if they're good, like, I don't think it would be shocking because, yeah, you've added 45 players in the portal. So it's either going to, like, either way, it's not going to be surprising. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you're going to,
if they won the Big 12, it would be shocking.
That would be shocking, but that's not going to happen.
No, it's not.
I don't know. I feel like there's just like a very small gap of the teams that aren't expected to be very good, but you look at them and you're like, yeah, they shouldn't be expected to be very good.
Yeah, and I think I'm right there with you as far as, wow, all these teams are 7.5 wins. So I think for me, I'm kind of looking at it as, you know, who's had a really good offseason? Who could actually win the Big 12 if just everything falls perfectly? And the two teams I kind of look at in that 7.5 range, I just have this weird feeling that UCF's going to be really good. I think they've added a lot of talent in the transfer portal. I think they're going to be able to run the football at a very high level with the two running backs they got with Harvey and Boone, and then, of course, KJ Jefferson. There's something I like about them. I don't like their defense, and so that's kind of why I'm a little bit hesitant. But then the other team is Iowa State. And again, with them, I don't trust Matt Campbell. But they return a ton. They showed a lot last year, just maturing, getting better. I think those are two teams I'm really looking at, kind of with just a side eye of, hey, you know, if things go right, maybe they could win the Big 12.
Yeah, I can see that. They've made some good moves, and they've definitely got a backfield that's going to be, should be one of the better ones in the Big 12 on paper, at least. And so, yeah, I think that they'll be plenty productive offensively, but defense is the question for them as well. So, man, it's a wide-open race. I mean, you got K-State and Utah that are kind of the perceived favorites. Kansas is right there. For some people, Oklahoma State's right there. And then you have the question marks of how good could they be, like a Texas Tech, who's – you know, possibly like flirting with making a bowl again, or they're, you know, winning like 9 games maybe if things go really, really well for them. I mean, it's hard to really know. And with Oklahoma and Texas out of the picture, I just think it makes it even that much more of a gamble when you're trying to go win-loss throughout the schedule. Mm-hmm. You can kind of say like, okay, they're not beating Texas or they're not beating Oklahoma. Now it's like, I don't think there's anybody really that you go, they're just going to roll through. Even Utah, as confident as they are, I feel like they're going to stumble a couple of times. So yeah,
especially away from home.
Yeah. So I think it's a really fun league, and it should make for a lot of just craziness when it comes to the conference standings. But I think UCF's maybe being slept on a little bit. So that would definitely answer part two of Scotty's question. Thank you, Scotty. Wyatt Smith, out of all the transfers, do you think any of them will wear single digits?
You know, I'm not really sure kind of how they're going to handle single digits this year. I mean, Daquan Finn would make a lot of sense because he wore 7 during his time at Toledo. I wonder if, you know, maybe he goes back to that. He was wearing 12, right, I believe, this off season. So he could be one, you know, maybe an Ashton Hawkins. But, we haven't really seen them put a huge emphasis on single digits, and I don't really think that they don't matter like they did. So I don't think it necessarily matters if any of them are wearing a single digit outside of just the cool factor, because I know a lot of people love single digit numbers a lot more than the other ones.
Yeah, Matt Rhule made it a cool thing and kind of a niche thing that you got excited about during the off season and looked forward to and the unveiling and all of that there for a couple of years. But it really hasn't been made to be that big of a deal since like Arandis. I guess they kind of did that right away, the unveiling of single digits, and then they just sort of got away from it and
done with it.
Didn't really mean as much. And so I don't know how much it means, but there's only Matt Jones on the roster right now, I think, that has a single digit. So they're still holding them open. I just don't think it's like this public exercise of making it a big deal, which I'm fine with. But there is some special nature to it because otherwise they'd be filled up.
Right. There has to be some reason why they weren't, unless guys just truly didn't want those numbers. That would be a good question for Dave Aranda, to be honest. We haven't asked him really about it recently.
Yeah, I mean, there's the possibility to have 18 guys wearing single digits because of the – well, I guess you could actually do 20 because zero's in play now, right? So R.J. Snead wore zero a couple years ago. So if you can do everybody on offense and defense, you can have like 20 guys in single digits. They've got one, period. It's Matt Jones who wears number two. That's it. So – they're open for some reason or another, but that is something to maybe ask Dave Aranda. And I would think a Daquan Finn would be a good candidate. Obviously, maybe one of the wide receivers. I could definitely see wearing some single digits as well. Not sure about defensively, but not strange to see players in college at any position really wearing single digits that are some of the best players. So there's plenty of there's plenty of them available. And now that I look at it, like Ashton Hawkins wore number two last year at Texas State. So, he's worn number one and number two. Yeah. So, well, he would be a candidate to wear one of those numbers.
He would make a lot of sense. Keytron, who isn't a transfer, he would make sense. Caden Jenkins. I mean, if you're going to go through the whole roster, but specifically the transfers, offensive lineman, defense lineman, probably not.
Right,
I wouldn't think, but you know, maybe defense line. We'll see.
James Lynch wore number nine there at the end of his career, so it's possible to see guys on the D line wearing them. Yeah. But that was during the Matt Rhule era. So, clearly they're kind of holding those open, and we'll see who fills those in over time. But plenty of candidates. Hear anything about potential grad transfers?
Nothing right now. Kind of like I mentioned, just not a lot of spots available. We'll see. I mean, it could happen that maybe Baylor loses a guy and then they're able to add another guy, you know, going into the summer as, you know, guys graduate. Maybe they decide to go elsewhere. That's a possibility, of course, but nothing really right now.
For 25 recruiting, what are the primary positions we need and how many of each position?
Right. So I think we've talked about this a few times, but wide receiver, absolute position of need, inside linebacker, and edge. Those three spots seem to be the most important, the focal points for this class as far as where they could take a bunch of different guys. I think wide receiver, probably four, edge, three, maybe four, especially as they're starting to play more, two jack sets. Maybe it's four. Maybe it ends up being four. Linebacker, I think it'll be at least three. Interior linebacker, but again, maybe even four. They're going to look to address kind of a bunch of positions. I expect this to be a pretty big class, but those three are definitely focal points.
For 25 recruiting, what are the primary positions? Okay, you already got that. Basketball, any news on filling out the rest of the bench scholarship spots available? I think we pretty much touched on that.
Yeah, I mean, on the premium side of things, you can kind of get a sense for what's coming. I know Ashley has alluded to something probably coming pretty soon. But again, I think the main area of focus is the center position, whether it's a backup or a direct competition for Josh O. That's the biggest spot that will have a direct impact on kind of this season. If they add anything else, I think it'll be more depth upside type guys, not necessarily for this year.
Overrated saying that Wyatt's questions were the pencil and paper question of the week. Yes, he had needed to jot those down. There's a lot to try to keep track of there, but we appreciate those questions and appreciate Wyatt. And Overrated also asking, with the new trailer released last week, what are your best memories of playing the past college football video games?
Man, I don't know that I have one specific memory, but I remember playing it all the dang time. I mean, I freaking love that game, the 2014 one specifically, just because you had to just keep playing it because a new one never came out. Denard Robinson on the cover. I mean, yeah, it's been a long time. Really excited for it to come back out. I don't have any one game or one memory that just really stands out to me, but I played it a lot. I loved it. So much fun. When they had roster updates, it was like Christmas. So, yeah, really, really cool.
Yeah, it was not so much me playing as much as just watching my buddies play. Like, they got so into it and changing up the uniforms and putting Spat. Like, when Spat first became a thing, you could add onto your create a player. Like, that was always, like, they had to Spat up their players, mm-hmm. which is basically the ankle tape that players use. But you could you can get like black spat tape, which is a big deal back then. Now it's like you can get like purple baseball gloves, you know, like you, but we had limited options in the early 2000s. And so spat alone was like, cool. Now you've got like whatever color you want. Right. But to have like just it period was cool. And they loved the create a player and
Road to Glory
and all that. And so I spent a lot of hours just kind of watching them, quite frankly, to the side. But yeah, I played a little bit. I enjoyed it. I'll probably get the game just for the novelty factor of it, but I'm not going to be one of those that's like on a dynasty campaign for the next, you know, 5 years. Yeah. And no offense to those who are, like, I'm all about it, but I've just never been like that much of a player myself. So
yeah, I just remember going into five wide sets with Bryce Petty and then putting Lake Seastrunk in the slot and him just running right down the middle, because in that game, if you weren't running man, it was basically a free reception every time. Yeah, I mean, it was just fun, especially those Baylor teams, because they were pretty good as you know, the game changed and they, you know, got different. They became less good. But when you had that first update where, you know, Petty was like 90 overall and you had a bunch of guys who were really, really good, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. So looking forward, there's a lot of unknown details still on how the actual game's going to be, you know, play as far as the style and all the components of it. And people are very afraid that it's going to be just like Madden, which, you know, based on just reading video game reviews, has not been a very popular game of late. Just kind of the same old, same old. They haven't really revolutionized it in any way for a while now. So there's some fears that this is just going to be a copy and paste college version of that. But the people who've created it have pushed back on that. So they've got big expectations. A lot of people excited about that game, and I'm looking forward to hearing the reviews and watching some of the inevitable thousands of videos and streams that will pop up as a result of this game over the next several months.
Yeah, I got to decide if I'm going to buy a PS5 or not, because I don't even have that. Yeah. I don't even have that part of it. So, you know, I might have to just to buy this game, which is kind of crazy to think about.
I don't think you'd be the only one. I think there's probably people doing that right now. But, yeah, there will be a lot of content from that game coming out across across social media and beyond for sure over the next few months. So thank you for those questions. And then James Taylor, one, knowing what you know of the roster and your expectations for win total, do you think that Dave is our coach next season? I've been impressed with his coaching hires, especially Spab, but curious your thoughts on a path forward and how that aligns with Mac's expectations.
Yeah, I think Dave Rand is going to be the coach next year. And I've just had this feeling all year, because I do think Baylor's going to find a way to make a bowl game. And I think if they make a bowl game, that's enough. And if they show some signs, show some momentum, are competitive in games, I think that would be enough. And ultimately, I don't think this schedule is that daunting. I know it looks daunting, but it's a lot of teams that are expected to win 7, 6, 8 games, and then lower than that. I just, there's no real juggernauts really on this schedule. And so for that reason, it makes almost every game winnable. And so I think they can get to 6 wins. I think that is enough to get Dave Aranda another season. And that's kind of what I expect to happen at the moment.
I mean, yeah, I mean, knowing nothing about the actual results from next year and just, you know, prognosticating and coming up with as best of an answer as we can of what we think it's going to look like next year. Yeah, I think they'll make a bowl game. I don't think it'll be, you know, done by week 8 that they're already set for the postseason. I think it's probably going to be gritting your teeth a little bit, getting into like the last month of the year and going like, we need to win 2 of the next 4 or 3 of the next 4 to get into a bowl game. That's kind of where I am with them right now. But if they do that, which I think they're capable of doing that, then I would think he'd be back. I don't think he can make a bowl game and then fire him. That wouldn't make much sense whatsoever. So I think they'll make a bowl game, maybe by the skin of their teeth, and that would mean that he's probably back. So, yeah, I'll say that he's back based on what we know right now. But that could definitely shift before the season starts. And I'm not, you know, 100% sold that a bowl game's a guarantee either. And if they don't make one, then I don't see how you could possibly bring him back.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you that if they make a bowl, there's no way you can fire him. But I also think if they're, again, advanced metrics-wise, like ranked 80th or something, and they're barely winning games and they've gotten blown out 3 times, then it becomes more of a conversation, I think. But in general, that is kind of the line that I draw as well.
Yeah, you'd have to be embarrassingly bad and fortunate to make a bowl game if you're just getting decimated on three different occasions. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's entirely possible. Yeah, if it's a you got lucky to get here, but still, you get to the postseason, that's a step forward. So most likely that'd mean you're coming back. But, yeah, there's some particulars. There's some nuance that we don't have. But getting to six wins would probably be very good for his job security. All right, so let's see here. Just a couple more questions to go. Jay Poteet, which true freshmen are not going to redshirt? And of that, which true freshmen will have the most impact this season?
Yeah, I don't think we're specifically going to know who's not going to redshirt at this moment. I don't think a lot of the early enrollees are going to burn their redshirt. Just kind of looking at it, I think most of those guys will redshirt. Maybe guys like Kylan Reed, Jaden Porter, I could see them playing in four games. If Colton Price were to get injured, then maybe Colton Siraki would have to play. But I am interested in the guys who are coming in the summer, specifically Josh Lehrer and Alex Foster. I think those are two guys who could end up not redshirting and playing the entire season. We'll see on that. We'll see kind of what the depth looks like and how the roster takes shape. But specifically Alex Foster, I think, is probably the one that I'm most expecting not to redshirt, but we'll see. There's some adjustments going on this, you know, there. So I guess he'd be the freshman with the biggest impact.
Which underclassmen that haven't played much are in line for a breakout year?
You know, I think Jackie Marshall is one. He's technically an underclassman, redshirt sophomore. I think he's going to have a really productive season, and we haven't gotten to see him because, of course, he got hurt last year. I think guys like Kyan Roberts-Day, Trey Wilson, Brendan Bett, all along the defensive line are reasons why I'm so optimistic about their defensive line. I think they're going to take a huge step forward. I think there's some upside there mixed with the experience of Cooper Lands, Alanis Noel, and Trevin Maye. Outside of that, you know, if Carl Williams didn't break out last year, I think he will this year. I think he's going to be really good for them. Of course, Caden Jenkins already has as well. And then Alvin Ebasele at left tackle. I think he's one who you're going to look at and say, wow, that's a completely different player from a year ago. And he might be, along with maybe a transfer to, the biggest reason why the offensive line gets back to at least being average this season.
And finally here, from Jay Poteet, tell us what makes an ideal college football Saturday for each of you, whether that's a certain food you have to have on game day or a morning routine getting ready for the day. Appreciate all the work you guys do. Well, we appreciate you, Jay Poteet. And I would love to give you a great answer, but my Saturdays are work days. So there's nothing super special about it. I don't get to go tailgating and do all that fun stuff. I don't get to just go watch the game. I'm not complaining, mind you. I'm not, like, sobbing over here. But, like, what you think of as a normal Saturday is still a work day. So I'm usually getting ready to go do a pregame show, like, 4 hours ahead of time and then go over to the stadium and then eat there, basically, and then go to the postgame and don't get to leave early and then go home and do a rapid review podcast and start writing. So that's not the answer you're looking for, but that's my Saturday. And hopefully, depending on when the game time is, like, try to hopefully get like a good window of actually watching college football. But when I was younger, would do more of like specific types of foods and things when I could just like sit back and watch and do like little smokies and crackers and things like that. And that was always fun to just kind of sit back and be at home and watch games all day. But that's a long time ago. So, yeah, like I said, not complaining, but I don't have that same type of experience anymore. So you'd probably be better equipped to answer that.
For me, it's the tradition. Take a shower in the morning immediately just to get ready for game day. George's is – this is the ideal, right? So if I'm coming to Waco for a game, George's as early as possible – then the Sikkim 365 tailgate, and then go watch Baylor win on a Saturday. That's my ideal Saturday game day. Love it. Get to watch games throughout the day. So a night game is my favorite, personally, when it comes to when to watch a game. So getting to watch games while at the tailgate is kind of my favorite part of that. And then, of course, going to the game. And, you know, Baylor winning is kind of the cherry on top, right, if they're able to get that done. But, yeah, that's kind of my tradition. It's nothing too crazy, but I think it's something that I think most fans can, you know, relate to.
Yeah, I think that's always – it's fun to have those Saturdays and have the opportunity to just enjoy. And yeah, if your team wins, it's even better. So, yeah, Jay Poteet, maybe I'll have a better answer someday soon. But right now, it's still very much like kind of a work day. That's it's kind of dictated by by work stuff. So I'll remember fondly the mid-90s when I had more of a routine watching Nebraska and Oklahoma and whatnot growing up, and just really enjoying that immensely. So thank you for that question, and everybody else who was a part of the mailbag this week, Jay Poteet, as well as James Taylor 1 and Overrated and Wyatt Smith and Scotty B. the Baylor King as well. Grayson, anything before we head on out here?
No, just be sure to check out Sikkim 365 Premium for more coverage on recruiting, football in general, basketball. I know Levi's been doing a great job on baseball as well, so he's kind of been ending the season on, you know, with various articles as well, kind of the trajectory of the program, and he's been doing softball too. So be sure to check out all of that. And then, of course, 365 Sports Radio, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 as well.
Yes, over 40,000 now on YouTube. I think over 42,000 now climbing. Would love to hit 50 here in the next few weeks, couple months. That would be amazing. But if you haven't already subscribed to 365 Sports on YouTube, please do so. And if you haven't subscribed here, Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365, where we focus on the Bears exclusively, then please hit that like button and that subscribe button, and we would certainly appreciate that. We'll be back next Tuesday at 11:15, and maybe we got some new uniform changes to talk about. I'm sure we'll have something transfer related to talk about, and kind of the usual stuff, but we are getting into the summer months now, and of course we'll see where softball is at that point as well after the super regional trip to Gainesville. Good luck to them. Congratulations on reaching that point, but I would love to see them continue on even further, obviously. So best of luck to Glenn Moore and his team there. But that'll do it for us this week. Thanks to Garrett and Jack behind the scenes, and thanks to Grayson Grunhafer. I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.